Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon. This is the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula Nunes.
And I'm Taz Powers.
And we have an incredible guest today.
You bet, Paula. If you are excited about diving into an open inferno of truth and passion that will fire up your heart and aliveness, well, we have the man to direct us. His name is Tobias Lars. Paula, tell us more.
Well, Tobias actually studied in India. He started his a 25-year journey of spirit study. And then he spent time in India with a master teacher, studied shamanic practices with a Native American free beings, heart-centered tantra, ego confrontation, the path of divine romantic love, and with the help of a mentor, opened back up to the energies of nature, kingdom of Pan, and the Devic kingdom. Well, Tobias, that is one of my favorite subjects. I love the nature spirits and all around the Pan and Devics. So you have a new book out, and we want you to tell us a little bit about the book.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. Yeah, it's my favorite subject, too. And I was going to say, with Pan, it's almost forgotten, you know, at this point on Earth, that it's the kingdom of nature. It's he is literally, if I get permission from him to talk about him, but he is God in manifest form, and he's been, you know, derided and made fun of, or we made him into the devil at one point, the horned god. And back in Greek and Roman times, he was the faun or Pan. So he is the father. Where he walks, things spring up, literally. And there are people now on the planet that are encountering him again as a real being. There's a woman I know in I think it's in Wisconsin, and her husband, normal people, quote unquote, whatever that means, but engineer, librarian, and they started growing a garden, and it's sort of the Findhorn experience as well. Pan showed up for them. So it's the original. Yeah, go ahead.
I call him the CEO of the nature spirits.
That's perfect. He is. And he's also, it's just like anything else. It's the gentler and more loving something is, in a way, on a deeper level, it unsettles us and can scare us. So that's what happened when we left nature. He became scary to us. But him and Mother Earth are really our parents. You know, that's the real situation.
And that's what we've lost touch with. So.
Yes.
It's sad, but true. We need to come back to our nature spirits.
And it's a lot more fun. If we want to have fun and like our bodies and enjoy the earth and you know, feel good with our sexuality, with love, with our minds, really, we just need to go back to the original plan. It was and is a good one. You know?
Is there any particular incident that started you on this journey?
I think I always say I never grew up with any churchism or any particular religionism, and so I was sort of a blank slate. And my father was a nuclear physicist, scientist, and we came from Sweden, and it was, you know, it's a very modern society, but I always joke, and this isn't funny, but In Sweden, they actually teach Christianity as a school subject because they think it's so innocuous and so non-threatening. So it's taught like history. You know, you'd think in a socialist country, that would be the farthest thing from it. So there was no religion in my life. And then it was just time to awaken when I was about 19, a freshman in college. I just opened a book one night. It was Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. Somehow it came across my path. But I looked at the yoga asanas, the positions, and my body recalled how to do them. And I was a scientific mind at the time and very into sports, physical, and science. And that just occurred in my body. I did them. My body did these positions. And as I did them, the closest I could say it is, it was like a key reaching into a lock and unlocking circuitry. And all this energy flooded my body, and I had a concrete, undeniable experience that there's something happening here that I haven't had occur before. And I had kundalini waves and awakenings, and I would literally spin out the top of my head, and I would see other lifetimes of me being a yogi in India. And so I couldn't deny it, that it was out of the box at that point. And that was the first impetus to all my looking into spiritual things. So it just happens spontaneously. And I think it happens that way for a lot of people.
I think so.
Yeah.
So your newest book, Listening to the Sun,
yes.
Where did this title come from?
Well, it's so... I had a working title, which was called Awakening Souls, for about 5 or 6 years, you know, working on the book, or it would just come spontaneously. I'm so lazy, you know. I love the Indian teacher, Osho. He basically says he's so lazy, he doesn't want to do any work at all, you know. Meaning, at the same time, we don't have to work. It can happen naturally, you know. It can feel good to do things. And the working title was Awakening Souls for a few years. And then when I really got serious about I'm actually going to publish this, then I could feel spirit going, oh, really, you're actually going to do something with it? Well, then we'll come in and actually give you the title that, you know, we think you ought to have on it. So it was literally 2 or 3 days before publishing it, they just said, no, we're going to go with this title. And it's actually from an experience I had that's one of the chapters in the book. The chapter's called No One is Listening to the Sun, but that feels a little harsh sometimes, so I call the book We're Not Listening to the Sun. I was laying in the pool in Phoenix, Arizona on June 21st on the summer solstice, which I wasn't aware of at the time, and I had an experience of feeling the sun. You know, this is the Valley of the Sun, it's the Phoenix, it's a great archetype, but there was a literal communication. You know, the energy coming off the sun is the eruption of consciousness or spirit into the physical, would be one way to say it. The rays coming off the sun have all the information, just like we have fiber optic information through our internet, the way we can do this radio show, and we're all hooked into it. Well, the ultimate fiber optic cables in the universe are the rays of stars. These are full of information. They tell all our plants how to grow. They give all the downloaded info, the codes for different star systems. So the sun is the Earth's information giver on how to develop. And I was feeling the sun talking to me. You could say it, you know. You don't want to get locked up because we're talking to things like this. But just like Mother Earth is a being, so is the sun. And the sun was just sharing with me, directly downloading information about how it creates planets and how it informs planets. And it showed me that if you travel through the universe, if you go to other star systems, you as a spirit, as a piece of consciousness, as you approach a star system, that particular sun, which will have a different vibrational fingerprint, a different electromagnetic makeup, each sun is a unique fingerprint, just like each soul is a unique vibro electrical magnetic spiritual consciousness fingerprint. I call them soul print. And the sun was telling me, yeah, isn't that amazing? Just you could feel that for a second.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, so the sun is sort of the eternal place for us earthlings. It is going to be there for billions and billions of years. So no matter what civilizations come and go, the sun is still going to be doing its thing.
Well, many cultures pray to the sun and have rituals with the sun.
And I don't think that's an accident, because that's sort of the basic going back to where we're getting the pure information from. In the physical expression of God, in a sense, is the eruption of the sun. You know?
You feel that in your heart.
Yeah.
With a
connection. So what a simple way, in a great little exercise sometimes I do with people, just during the day, you can be driving in your car, it doesn't matter, just put your attention on the sun and just feel those rays going through the building or through the car, those electromagnetic gamma infrared rays actually coming into you. X-rays go right through us. Well, all the sun rays go right through us too, and let them notice it. If you notice the sun, you are tapping into it. And you can do that just for 10 seconds now and then during the day. And it's a very simple way to realign yourself.
Now, this is modern vitamins. Vitamin D has become very popular because people are not out in the sun enough, so they're lacking in vitamin D. So I think that's telling us something. It's telling us
absolutely.
We're not paying attention.
Yeah. Absolutely, and the sun, we have this push now to somehow make the sun dangerous, which is very interesting. And if you feel behind that, there's something that's trying to disconnect us from our source. And I'm not saying skin cancer isn't real, of course it is, but that's only because the sun's trying to clean you up. I mean, I'm going to just speak truth today, you know. When you're detoxing, you know, there's not pretty stuff coming out of you. And so that when you go, the natural sun rays will try to detox the chemicals and the unnatural things that we have collected because our kidneys and livers don't know how to detox quickly enough, you know, all the man-made chemicals.
And so,
that's a good thought there.
I've never thought of it that way.
I haven't either. That's really good.
So the title came from that, from connecting with the sun, and it was a direct experience, and it literally showed me how solar systems work. I was going to complete the thought about, so when you travel as a spirit through the universe, which we do, let's be honest, there's lots of UFO activity and ETs now. It's because we are all one family. It's a universal family. Universe means the song of one, a universe. And there really is only one song in this particular creation. And when we travel through the universe as spirits, as we get close to a sun, it tells us how to form our physical body and our spirit to work harmoniously in that star system. And it's a beautiful automatic process to open-hearted, open-souled spirit. So that's what it showed me that afternoon. And it also said, if you listen to my plan for the earth and let that percolate through you, you guys won't be having the problems that you're having.
Well, I don't know if other people have come up with this theory, but I think it's a beautiful theory. I think it should be, it's profound, let's put it that way, so simple but profound.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard this from anyone else, so I think it's wonderful.
Well, people always talk about, I was going to say, people always talk about having downloads of spiritual information. You know, having a download from the sun is definitely positive.
How pure can that be? You're getting it directly from the source. There's no interference.
Yeah.
You're not having any interpretation. You know.
Well, and one of your when you mentioned in one of the chapters you've encountered with death, the angel or being that we've referred to as death, tell us more about that.
Yeah, and this was during a period when I had to be quiet. There's certain times in our life when our soul comes to us and says, look, you know, you need time to be with yourself. And there's sort of our soul overrides our personality and says it's time to wake up. So a bunch of these things started happening, and it's there for all of us, and it's happening more and more for everyone. But I was just putting my attention on what is death. And I was actually at the gym. I went at a gym, and it was kind of a rough, crowded gym, and there was lots of tattoos around. And I was looking at a young guy with the Grim Reaper tattoo on his arm, you know. And it just sort of a timeless moment occurred where I received what you said, Taz, a download directly from a timeless place about who and what the angel of death is. And it was very, very sweet and beautiful. And you say he, but that's the closest thing. It's not sex. It's he, she, it. It's an angel whose original role was to help us during our time of transitioning forms. There used to be a time in the land of Pan on Earth where we could pop in and out of forms the way we pop soap bubbles. Our forms were lighter, even though they were physical, and death was not a denied gateway. It wasn't something that we couldn't see past. So there would still be a form change, and right during that form change, that moment of surrender, death, the angel, was the carrier or guardian or assistant of helping us. It was like a birth and death at the same time. And so it's our friend. It's our assistant. It's our helper. It's like a good midwife. And that's the original design. And this spirit and I connected, and he shared with me that, in a way, he's turned into the bad guy because we're just scared about the transition, you know? And that really, it's a friendly midwife between dimensional existences. And it was beautiful, and it was very from the heart, too, because this angel of death said, you know, in a way, he's sad because now he doesn't get to deal with us in a playful way. Often he's feared, and very few conscious spirits come to him at that moment. So, and that's from an emotional point of view, but that's really one of the biggest healing places we need to go to as spirits on Earth. We have tried to forget about our emotions, and we're reaping all kinds of emotional disease at this point because of that. So it was a beautiful experience, and it's not always easy to tell people about because it's such a shrouded and mystery experience currently.
Now, how long ago was that been, or is that in another dimension?
When that happened on Earth?
Uh-huh.
My sense of it is, and we can all tap into the collective because we all are the collective. People call it reading the Akashic Records, or Christians, it's called the Book of Life. There is an eternal imprint of time. Since there is no time, it's all occurring at once. But when I ask about it, the closest I get is about 5 million years ago that the land of Pan existed, where mm-hmm. the original Garden of Eden, it's our collective remembrance of a Garden of Eden where we had easy physical forms, and it was really just a playful place.
Well, when you talk about the angel of death, it reminds me of a caterpillar turning into a butterfly, or a plant dying and leaving seeds for new plants to start growing next year.
Yeah.
So it's
with masters like Jesus or Buddha or many other masters that aren't known, you know, publicly, they learn to make friends with this, with death again, and they can literally transmute their bodies back into pure energy and light, and we call it ascension. This is a real thing, and it's coming back into the collective consciousness more and more. Paramahansa Yogananda's master teacher, Babaji, he speaks of that openly, that he has that ability to this day, of eternal youth and has been alive for 9,000 years in the same body on earth, and actually was the Krishna in his original form. I hope I don't get in any trouble for telling
him. No, but he can be seen in different locations.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he appear in different locations?
Yes, and so this is a natural talent we used to have, and this history is coming back to earth. More of us, we've had master teachers like Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, that we thought, oh, those are gods, we could never be like that. But just lately now, we're getting humans awakening, and it's really exciting. We're getting Eckhart Tolle, Katie Byron, and others that are doing public work that are having undeniable true awakening, and it's coming closer to us as humans that we can have this for us as well. And like one of my favorite teachers, Osho, said, if we could just get 1,000 of us to really wake up, maybe the whole game of, you know, pain and disconnection and separation would finally be over. And that reverberates truly for me. If 1,000 of us could wake ourselves up to our oneness, then really that would be all we need to do.
Well, maybe that's what 2012 is all about. There'll be enough of us awakening that will shift everything.
Doesn't that feel good when you think about
that?
Yeah. So my goal with my book is to have some fun, and it's written fun, and also truthful. It's just me telling truth. It's time to come out of the spiritual closet. You know, lots of us are doing it, right? And the more of us do it, then everybody goes, it's not a big deal, you know. And so we're really getting closer and closer to that. My particular teaching is whatever it is, and everyone has a different piece of the puzzle. But one thing that came to me very strongly in my own personal awakening, and I'm still growing, I'm awake compared to where I was, and is the emotional body and heart, you know, and really bringing that back as one of the key ingredients at the round table of our souls, not just intellect, not just spirit and the body, but the heart. And that's why Mother Earth is coming back as well so strong, because that is really her essence. Her essence is heart, feeling, you know, emotion.
Well, we were just talking about appreciating nature, and your chapter 22 is actually called Appreciating Nature. And while you were writing that chapter, did you have any special experiences?
I did. That came from a day of sitting up in Oak Creek, which is the creek here in Sedona. And it was just a beautiful fall afternoon, and there's lots of skunks up and down the creek there, and I was sharing blackberries with a skunk. And he'd look at me, and I'd look at him, and we were just sitting by the creek. It was wonderful. And things got very beautiful and quiet, and I could feel Mother Earth saying, there's a simple way for you to appreciate me. And the word appreciate, she showed me, you know, when we say appreciate, it means to lift up in vibration. Appreciate, our stocks appreciate, not lately, but I'm kidding. But but we use that word for things growing or rising up in vibration. And she showed me, she just said, just bring people out here and let them appreciate the sunlight on the water, sharing blackberries with a skunk, the red rocks, the leaves on the trees, you know, it was fall. And as they feel that appreciation in their heart for my beauty, they're sending me literally electromagnetic energy that will lift me up in vibration. And she was just showing me an easy way to help assist the planet. Go out and enjoy, appreciate nature, and just the simple act of doing that makes you feel good, makes your body work better, and it literally will feed the earth with heart, love, soul energy from humans, which is what she wants. She wants to play with her children, you know.
When you're talking about sharing the berries with the skunk, do you find the closer you get with nature, the more the wild animals accept you?
Yes, you can't fool them. You can't. You can't. They. You know. Absolutely. And you learn to feel that they are just different aspects of an intelligence on Earth.
I had a friend that was meditating, and a hawk actually landed on her shoulder while she was meditating. And I said, "That's because you became one with nature."
That's just amazing. It actually landed on her shoulder?
Yes.
That's beautiful.
So I thought, wow, that, what an example of becoming one.
Yeah. And St. Francis is our patron saint of that, you know. I mean, I heard the story the other day. It was so beautiful. Of he would sit by the lake and talk to the fish. And his followers or disciples would think, you know, he's crazy, right? But he would talk out loud to the fish, but they couldn't deny it because the fish would actually jump and come and talk to him. So they couldn't deny that he was actually talking to them because they would all start jumping right in front of him.
I have a statue of St. Francis in my backyard, just to appreciate him for how he worked with nature.
Yeah, and there's a beautiful story. I didn't know this till just the other day, but the last word St. Francis ever said was he used to ride on a donkey, you know, that took him everywhere, and he called him Brother Donkey. And the last words of St. Francis were not to his disciples, but they were to his donkey, and he said, "Thank you so much, Brother Donkey, for having been with me and loved me and served me all these years." Those were St. Francis's last words. And the donkey couldn't stand the separation, so he went ahead and left his body as well when that happened.
You hear that a lot because of owners with dogs or cats. They will pass away right after the owner does.
Yeah.
You were talking about appreciation. How about how we appreciate money? It's definitely in the collective consciousness right now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fear around it, and it's a global fear.
Yes. And timely. It is a purging of our addiction to money, you know. I mean, it's basically idolatry, or, you know, I mean, that's a heavy word, but we are worshiping. I joke about it. In our bills, it says, "In God we trust." I always add a little L in there. It's in gold we really trust, you know. And that's not to shame ourselves or be angry at ourselves. It's completely understandable because for many of us, God has not been a parent, meaning not in front of us, or even a parent as a father and mother lately. In our experience, the thing we have been able to depend on has been money. So it's a completely understandable situation. But, I had an experience once where if we can exchange our money with love, was the words that came to me. And what it showed me was, is when you give money and write your bills and receive money, that you do it in the vibration of love, then money becomes embraced by love and takes its rightful place. That's a short sentence to say it. But because we have separated love from money, you know, in a way, and that has made it separated from love. I mean, we've done it in our consciousness. So there's a way to do that. Exchange your money with love. And it means both, at some point we will not have money on this planet again because we won't need it, but that's not happening tomorrow. But we're headed in that direction. And in the meantime, to get there the quickest way is start exchanging your money with love. When you write a bill, write it with love. Thank you. You know, thank you. And receive it with love. And then money will take its rightful place. And eventually, we will be able to exchange money on this planet for love completely. And it sounds idealistic, I know. I mean, it sounds naive at some point for people to hear that. But it's true. Every teacher has said the same thing. So if we start doing it in our personal lives, then we'll have a different experience of money. Money will feel like love to us. And when you give it, remember it's love that you're giving. And when you receive it, it's love that you're receiving. So exchange your money within the spirit of love, and then down the road we'll be able to exchange our money for pure love.
Well, I find myself thinking differently. When I go to a restaurant and pay for the bill, I do it and saying to myself, I'm thankful for the great food I had here, the great atmosphere, and I give this money with love so that this restaurant can continue.
Isn't it feel good?
Mm-hmm. And
I love doing that. And then, yeah, we'll start changing our approach to money. There's lots of fear and stuckness with money, you know. I mean, we're learning the hard way, and right now we're getting a collective wake-up call, and it is just as it should be what's happening right now. It is as gentle a wake-up call as possible. Edgar Cayce predicted that by now our continents and, you know, would have, the poles would have shifted, and we would have had major earth upheavals, and so we're really living in a period of grace right now. We're having loving grace giving us as gentle as possible wake-up calls, if you look at it.
Almost like we have a wild card that we can play any way we want to.
I like that part. That sounds really good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a space and time here that we have to play with, and hopefully we do it correctly with love.
Yeah.
Now, You have one of your chapters, which is called Soul Anorexia,
mm-hmm.
and the role the emotions play in our spiritual awakening. And you talked about your own emotions. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. A lot of spiritual teachings for a long time have not included the emotional body. It's sort of been the emotions and the physical body have been hindrances or obstructions to spiritual enlightenment or awakening or salvation. We've made it somehow, the flesh is weak is the obvious one we've heard, but we've made emotion somehow cumbersome or problematic, you know. Whenever someone opens their emotion, we call it, oh, they had a breakdown. A breakdown. I like to call them break open. You know, it really is a break open. It's when our break forth. It's when our emotional body says, I have to come out and show myself. I cry deep sobbing, you know, or rage, you know, and we're very scared of them. We're scared. It's like volcanic upheavals, you know. So we've tried to throttle, contain, hide in the basement our emotional body. And you cannot do it. And every true teacher has said it's not a matter of ascending out of your emotional and physical bodies. It's a matter of integrating and becoming whole with them again. And that process is not all happy, happy, joy, joy, you know. When you start cleaning the pipes in an old house where they're clogged, there's not pretty stuff that comes out of your pipes. And there is no way to spiritual true integration except to truly integrate, heal, whole, bring with you all of your subconscious, and not just try to escape into your superconscious or the ascended part of yourself. So one thing Spirit came to me very clearly when I got, you know, intent and serious about I wanted to wake up more, it said, well, if you're sincere, this is the real situation, which is you have leftover karma or leftover subconscious stuff that really needs to be brought up to speed if you want it to be with you. Otherwise, you're doomed to come back over and over again to deal with it, you know.
And our medical, Western medical, the way they deal with this is just give you antidepressants and numb you. And I don't see how people can work with this when they're taking this type of medication.
Absolutely. Yeah, the medication. A couple of years ago, I got tricked by a spirit. I love how that happens. It happens to all of us. We get the universe or our own soul gets, you know, sets us up and gets us to do something we really want to do, but we didn't know it was coming. A couple of years ago, I ended up in the Amazon doing ayahuasca with some shamans. And ayahuasca is really this ancient, ancient tea made from plants in the Amazon that completely assists you with going into your subconscious and healing, facing your stuff that you've suppressed. And one of the requirements that ayahuasca cannot work with is if you're on any kind of psychoactive drugs, you know, or antidepressants, you have to be off them for a couple of months before this ancient drink, tea of the Amazon, can even work with you, because she, the spirit of ayahuasca, will say that stuff is not compatible with me. So that's absolutely right. And it's very dangerous, but it's also free will, and in the big picture, it's not a big deal. But we have to find ways to make ourselves healthy with our emotions. If we try to bypass that step and meditate our ways out of here, it's just not going to work, is the teaching as I understand it that I'm receiving. So healing our emotions is really one of the only ways. That mixed with spirit, you know, is what's going to be the true integration for humans. And I think we're learning that. More and more.
Now, does the ayahuasca make you physically sick?
It did me. It
yeah,
doesn't everyone, but about 99% of the people, yes, it does.
Do you think that's a form of the purification? Or
actually, what the natives call it, la purga, the purging. It is a total purging, but it purges you physically, it purges you emotionally, it purges you spiritually. It is an amazing, gentle, it is the gentlest purging I've ever come through. It is a grace, it is an assistance. I asked Spirit, God, and Mother Earth, what is this and where did it come from? And the message I received was that times are dire times on Earth right now, and this is an answer to a call from Mother Earth saying, I really don't want to be killed. And ayahuasca becoming more and more popular is a direct answer to that prayer from Mother Earth to Father Son or Father God aspect. It's all male, female, and the ultimate, but it's a direct vaccine for humans to help us get ourselves cleaned out again.
I have a friend that lives in Peru, and she takes people on journeys, and she always uses that. So
it's very, very strong. It's very gentle. It's very unpredictable. And part of what we do with spirit travel, I'm lining up the right situation, because you really only want to do it with very good-hearted shamans. And let's be honest, there's misuse in everything. There's good and bad psychics, good and bad teachers, good and bad ayahuasqueros. So there's always the yin and the yang of it. So part of spirit travel, where we take people on these spiritual adventure tours, is we will be doing that one as well. But I haven't quite lined up the right people to work with yet.
We also have a chapter... or you have several chapters about sex and spirituality and how we have been fooled about both of those. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah. Sex and spirituality is still sort of like, I joke about it, but it's still like neutron bombs, you know, trying to talk about the two of them together, you know. It's sort of World War III when it comes down to sex, right? It's the battle of the sexes. We're not doing very well with it. We're obsessed. We're obsessive compulsives, really, when it comes to sex, if we're honest, you know. We're obsessed with it, but we don't know how to deal with it. And so if we ask about it, obviously it was created by whatever created us. And to somehow believe that the source of everything, God, if you will, is against sex in any way, it just cannot be so, because God created sex. I have a challenge for someone out there. I want to see a bumper sticker that says, God loves sex. I would really like
that. So, I don't know what that would bring him.
I'm hoping someone will do it.
Why don't you?
Well, I'd love to, but I'm pretty busy with stuff. So that's my contribution, is to sow the seed for it. But of course, I always say, if you were the ultimate chef, you're very, very famous chef, and you have famous restaurants in Hollywood and London and Tokyo, and if you create these beautiful dishes that you want people to taste, and enjoy, you will not send that dish out into the world, out into the restaurant, the dining room, before you have tasted it, obviously. So we know that God and Goddess have certainly tasted sex before they sent it out for their kids to play with, right?
Right.
So that just negates the whole idea that somehow God is against sex. It's just, we've got to get beyond that, and we've got to incorporate it, include it, and let it be what it's meant to be.
And I think that's embedded, especially in the Western world, to children when they're just barely starting to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad to do this and it's bad to do that. So, we're raised that way.
Yes. And it is the Promethean fire. Prometheus was the Greek god that brought fire to humans, and he got punished for it. He got punished by the gods that he tried to share the fire of creation with us. And we have the fire of creation. The only way to create more human bodies is through sex. Even though there's a tendency now, and there is a future timeline where we do create it through cloning, but that timeline ends up in a dead end because cloning is not the natural order. And the little ETs, Zeta Reticuli guys, the little big-headed alien guys, are our future selves about a billion years from now that took the cloning route that's happening right now, and they've ended up in an evolutionary dead end. And besides, how much fun would it be to live like that?
No.
It's not much fun, The original plan is really the best. God knew what he was doing. And making love and enjoying sex. There were whole cultures, those famous temples in India with all the sexual positions on the outside, the Khajuraho temples, I think they're called. There was a whole culture there that really feels like they invented Tantra, real Tantra. And there was thousands of people that became enlightened or awake or natural humans by allowing sexuality to be the royal highway back to being fully awake. And that would really be the ultimate for us. It is the quickest way home, but it's also the most precarious because it is the strongest energy.
And not everybody can play with it in the correct manner.
Yeah, and it's self-regulating. If you do sex the wrong way, it ends up in horrible places, and it tells you this doesn't feel good and it's not working, Thank God for that. We have direct feedback, Sexual diseases and all that, and I know I'm stepping on toes here today, but all of those things are sort of feedback of, hey, something's not quite right,
Right.
We need to mix. Anytime you have love mixed in with it, you're okay.
Well, we're coming up to Thanksgiving and the Christmas holidays, and is there any hope for us? Do you have any encouragement to our listeners? Because I think people feel their future. I mean, they're looking at their future in fear. So is there any hope and what we can do, and especially during the holidays, to bring in love?
Yes. So when you go visit with your family, and do the true spirit of the holidays. They're holy days. The word holiday is really holy day. And that can be whatever that is for us, but take time to connect yourself. What feels good for you? You know, it's about love. It's about connection. It's about feeling good and feeding yourself, you know. And when you see all the craziness, and if you have a normal family, there's all kinds of dynamic and dysfunction and strange, you know, bedfellows at the holiday table, right?
And I know there's relatives you haven't seen all year.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be around them, and then at the holiday season, I have to put up with that person.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you can, give yourself total freedom. If you really don't feel like doing it, you can say things like, well, I'm spending the day with God. You know, I just want to be alone. You know, that could be one end of it, you know. That's claiming your power, you know. And don't take it so seriously, you know. We're all crazy, basically, at this point. You know, we're purging so much on the planet right now that to expect there to be love and functional families, it's just unrealistic, you know. So, but take time for yourself. And the true spirit of the holy days, we're planning on doing a party called the Spirit of the Holidays, which is, let's invite the Spirit. Let's invite Jesus to be with us. I mean, he's a real spirit. He's still here on the earth. Let's invite, you know, whatever spirits of the holidays that are real for you. Why not have a party or a get-together where you actually invite them in?
That would be great.
Give them a seat at the table, like the Jewish tradition of Seder, where they actually leave a place for Elijah. They have a seat for him to be there. Well, how about offering a seat for Jesus Christ at your holiday table? You know, well,
or any other spirit.
Yes, or any other spirit you connect to. That feels like the true spirit of the holy day for you. Feed yourself. Feed yourself with goodness. Enjoy. When you enjoy, you are actually sending out good vibrations to the rest of the universe. So whatever makes you feel connected, a walk, sitting in the park, playing with your dog, enjoying good food, going to a movie, whatever it is that makes you feel connected and fully filled with love, that is probably the best thing you can do to contribute to the holy day.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Now, you have Spirit Travel you've created, and actually, how was that born?
Spirit Travel is we go to do fun things that feed us and feed Mother Earth. I got kind of tricked into that too. I had a feeling one Christmas, that's funny about Christmas here, I had the normal Christmas doing social family function stuff, and I made a promise to myself. I said, next Christmas, I'm going somewhere all by myself. Right? And I'm going to avoid the whole hoopla, right? And I forgot about it, and then 2 weeks before Christmas, I remembered, and through various things, you know, I could trade a condo in Kona, Hawaii. I could stay there for free, basically, and let them stay at my townhouse, and it worked out beautifully, and I ended up in Kona, Hawaii by myself for the holidays. And before I left, I ran into a woman up by Coffee Pot Mountain in Sedona, and she told me, you need to swim with the dolphins this time. And it was a message from Spirit, you know, saying, this is your time to go out swimming with the dolphins. And I said, yeah, I know I want to, but I don't want to go on a tour, and I don't want to have to deal with a boat, and, you know, I just want to, you know, have it happen really easy. Well, it did. I met so-and-so. They told me exactly where the dolphins come in. And on the last day of my stay, I think it was Christmas Day, actually, and I was down there by the ocean, and all of a sudden, this pod of dolphins start jumping and showing themselves. And there must have been 50 people there. And I think I stood up and I said it out loud. I said, "That's my appointment." And I swam out to the dolphins. And this was by a place called the Place of Refuge in Kona, Hawaii, which is an amazing place. It's a sacred sanctuary, the only one left in all the Hawaiian islands. It used to be a place where the ancient kahunas, the hunas, would have complete forgiveness of whatever sin or kapu, tabu that the Hawaiian people had broken. They could come there and all was forgiven. And so this place has always been a complete forgiveness sanctuary.
Where is that?
It's in the south of Kona in Captain Cook. It's called the Place of Refuge in on the big island of Hawaii. So that's where I was. And I spent an hour and a half swimming with this pod of dolphins. And it was only me and one other person. And it was just really perfect. And they're very mischievous and playful, and they kind of looked at me at one point and said, "Look, you know, if you bring people here, and as long as you guys aren't too toxic, and if you guys are pretty okay, we'll come and play with you." And so I said, I had promised the spirit, I will do whatever you suggest. So that was the first trip we did. We go to Kona, Hawaii, and we swim with these pods of wild spinner dolphins. And we do it very respectfully, you know, and we do it just on an equal basis with them and if they approach us and want to play and stuff like that. So that was the impetus and the inspiration of starting spirit travel. And now we do a wolf adventure where we get to play with wolves, full Arctic and timber wolves. We get to have them lick our ears and play with them. And yeah.
That's something not very many people have. I mean, actually take people out and play with the wolves. I haven't heard that one before, and that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and so the idea was animals are totems. They're helpers. The spirit of the dolphin is play and not being bothered. If you're depressed, a dolphin will help you out. Dolphins are play and lightness of being, you could call it, play. The wolves are the spirit of the wild, you know, the call of the wild. There's a wildness there. Horses are freedom. You know, the wild horse in America is still a huge archetype. So we go on wild horse adventures, too. And then we swim with manatees, and manatees are peace. They're a peaceful vibration. I call them the Buddhists of the animal world. They will totally turn the other cheek, and they're all about nonviolence. You know?
They're so sweet.
Yeah. So giving people a chance to go on a fun vacation, and at the same time we do a spiritual seminar I call Sanctuary for Souls. And we usually only do that a couple hours a day in the morning. And lots of free time, lots of fun, lots of vacation. And at the same time we're contributing to these animal sanctuaries. We are learning something spiritually for ourselves and helping Mother Earth. So the idea behind spirit travel was to feed us. We also stay in beautiful places. I mean, it's luxury, it's fun, it's playful, it's enjoyment all the way around. And so the idea is through enjoyment we can feed the earth, feed ourselves, feed local economies, feed animal sanctuaries, and make it work all the way around, you know.
Now, do you go to Nevada to be with the wild horses?
The wild horses... No, I know there's lots of them up there, and I haven't actually been there. The place we found was a place in New Mexico that the original Mustangs that were the first viable band of wild horses that escaped from the Spanish was down in close to, there's nothing out there, but it's a little bit about 2 hours south of Albuquerque. And there was 32 horses that in 1608 or 1598, I forget when, escaped from the Spanish. And that, as far as historians can tell, is the first viable band of horses that were able to reproduce. Well, there's horses still in that area that they've had DNA tested that are, in fact, original Spanish Mustang. And there's a foundation in New Mexico, the New Mexico Horse Project.org, that has set aside land in several places for these horses to be able to live forever and live out their lives in total protection. So that's the place that's the place we go. And if we're calm spirits and if we're, you know, if they like us, they come within about 50 yards of us. And occasionally, once in a while, there's someone that connects to a particular horse, and they might have a close encounter with that horse. But so we connect with the wild spirit of the horse at the level of spirit, and we go out walking with them. And also stay at a beautiful bed and breakfast, an old ranch, and we can ride horses there as well. And so it's a Western true spirit of the West and the wild horse, and we contribute to the nonprofit organization that's setting aside lands for the horses as well.
Now, I'm reading that you have a UFO adventure. Now, where is that?
Yeah, that's something we're planning, and part of me is hesitant with that. I don't want to scare people off, you know, because they go, you know, so part of me is debating, but there are some places on Earth. Dr. Stephen Greer and James Gilliland are two pioneers.
I plan on going to James Gilliland's ranch.
Well, we're hoping that, I've been talking to him just a little bit, and so I'm not assuming anything yet, but it seems like we're going to be able to perhaps schedule something next summer to go up there. And so he's always felt good to me. He's doing something real, his personal life. There's obviously something happening up at the ranch. And it's from a loving perspective. These are our angel brothers or our other dimensional selves, you can call it. And so for people that want a beyond doubt, concrete experience of UFO connection, contact, we're hoping we can plan something with them up there. So that's what's in the works, yes.
And how about the Amazon?
And the Amazon, when we find the right shamans, you know, and the right situation, I want it to be accessible to all budgets. We're looking at one right now. I'm working and talking to a friend in Sedona who is going down there, and he is actually a descendant from Siberian shamans, and he is the real deal. And so he's going to help us bridge that. So we're hoping to have that scheduled sometime for the end of 2009. We want to make, you know, spirit travel. We want to incorporate true spiritual adventure, personal growth, fun, and supporting Mother Earth. So that's definitely coming up. We're just looking for the right exact place.
Well, if people want to, let's give out both of your websites, because people may want to keep in touch because they want to go on one of these adventures or read your book. So let's give out both of your websites. Go ahead.
My personal work with people, I do personal counseling and soul activation work, I call it. Just words, we need words. But if you go to SedonaSoulCounseling.com, SedonaSoulCounseling.com, I do a lot of my work over the phone and about 40% of it in person when people come to Sedona. I also go out and do seminars, and I can do it when I travel. Then the other website is SpiritTravel.com. That's our spiritual travel adventures. Spirit Travel is spelled with one T in the middle, only one T in the middle. Spirit Travel.
I found that out.
I
put two T's in there and it didn't work.
Right.
So Spirit
it just
Travel.
Spirit Travel with one T. And then you just click on the wolf or the horse or the manatee or the dolphin, and then, you know, and read about what we do. And if you feel inspired to come, we do small groups, just less than 10 people, and we just, it's a very intimate, relaxed, fun, connective thing. And really a once-in-a-lifetime adventure. I mean, playing with wolves or swimming with dolphins or swimming with manatees, it's really a life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking today to Tobias Lars and on the Taz and Paula Show. So if you go to TazandPaulaShow.com, you can read more about Tobias. And we have connection from our website. We connect to Tobias's website. And also, Tobias wrote an article for us. So if you want to read his article, and be sure to hop onto his website. So it's just been wonderful talking to you, and your adventures just sound some, you know, where everyone should at least take one of your adventures, depending on which animal totem that they're attracted to.
Yeah. Yeah, give yourself a gift that way. And I wanted to tell you, too. I want to just tell you love and appreciation for what you and Taz do.
Thank you.
I know it's work sometimes, and my heart can feel, my spirit feels love, appreciation, and gratefulness that what you guys are doing. And sometimes, you know that what you're doing is really reaching people and touching people.
Well, thank you. And we love to connect people to people exactly like you. So thank you for being with us today and taking out this time in your busy life. Maybe you don't have a busy life. Maybe you just lay out in the sun and enjoy those sunbeams. But
sometimes.
Thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you for having me on. Thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.